For me personally, I didn't fancy going to uni, so I'm going to need something to do after school. I'm going to need some way of getting into this industry.
It doesn't matter that I'm 17 years old, or like, why would age come into this? Like,
it was just turn up and just be yourself and be smiling.
But I didn't know what language it was going to be in, anything about the job.
Because actually, you're the youngest guest we've had on.
So I went to a couple of networking events, and I was lucky enough to meet my boss from all that.
I hadn't heard of that before, but I absolutely love it. I'm going to start doing it.
Yeah. If you weren't nervous, it'd be a bit surprising, to be completely honest. Hi, I'm Toby, and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. I'm Becky Sims, your host, and I have an amazing co-host back with me today, the wonderful Daisy. Daisy, please introduce yourself.
I'm Daisy, and I'm a third year digital marketing student based in Leeds.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming back. We loved having you here last time.
Thank you for having me.
And we have a really special guest with us today. Toby, tell us who you are and what you do.
Hi, my name's Toby, and I'm a junior software developer.
Fantastic. Now, the reason you're here feels really special to me. Like, this is because actually you're the youngest guest we've had on. And there's a real reason for this, because actually the reason we met was through Aspiration Digital. And I wonder if you can share some of that story and how that's led to us being here today.
Yes, I can. So in March of this year, I attended the Aspiration Digital in London, which was a travel for me because I live in Bournemouth. But I thought to myself, I really think I should be there because I wanted to see what careers are like in tech. So I decided to turn up, and then I got to hear the lovely lessons that everyone was teaching, the lovely stuff like that. And because of that, I ended up being told, you should do some networking. And I thought, all right, that sounds like a decent idea. I'm here for that. And I thought, especially since for me personally, I didn't fancy going to uni, so I'm going to need something to do after school. I'm going to need some way of getting into this industry. So I went to a couple of networking events, and I was lucky enough to meet my boss from all that, my now boss. So we stayed in touch. I finished my A-levels, and might have been 6 months later, he invited me for an interview, and I am now a junior software developer.
Amazing. And I just love, because this just shows the impact of coming to an event and taking some learnings away. Were there any particular things that stood out from the event that you went away? Like, obviously, the message of networking, but any particular talks or anything that had resonated with you that really gave you that, I could go and do this. And actually, it doesn't matter that I'm 17 years old, or like, why would age come into this? Like, I can absolutely go out there and meet these people and start chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought there was some brilliant talks on really helping me understand where my skills can be applied best. For example, in more specifically in developing, whether it's front end or back end, in the creative side, back end in the much more like structural thinking side. And it was really helpful to understand how they all work together, even with higher up in the business, with project managers, stuff like that. I thought all of those talks were really helpful to understand, to really get an idea on what a business is like and how it's structured, and to figure out where I fit into that. And because of that, it was really I saw a really nice path for me to get into this sort of thing. So I'm like, I'm ready to do that now. I feel like I can see myself fitting into that. I'd love to just get stuck in.
Love it. Absolutely love it. It's really inspiring, isn't it, Daisy?
I know, it really is. So how did you prepare for Aspiration Digital? You had your dad there, which I'm sure helped settle the nerves a bit. But how did you prepare for the event?
Well, I thought it was quite interesting because obviously everyone else is there with schools and big groups, so they all know each other. So while I did have my dad and that was nice, it was still, I was in a room full of people I didn't know, which was, you know, rare for that situation. But I think what was really nice is I think I didn't prepare a whole lot of physical stuff. Mm-hmm. I was just ready to listen. What was quite nice is at the start, I got a notebook so I could write stuff down. And it was quite nice to just basically go through the day and learn off as many people as possible. And if I especially resonated with someone and thought what they were saying was really important, I'd go up and speak to them afterwards, see if I'd catch them, see if I'd get a little bit more, any questions. Often they'd ask if you had any questions in the actual thing as well.
Yeah.
But I just think the main thing was just being ready to take it in and put it into action or ask any more questions if you had any.
Oh, well, I think that's really important, like going to speak to them, but also following up after they've given a speech. Because so many people, I think, would sort of say hi and be a bit like, oh, hi, I'm going to go watch your talk. And that's it.
Yeah.
So I really think it helps you stand out if you just be a bit more confident, put yourself out there and actually see them again. Be like, oh, actually, I really resonated with your talk.
Yeah.
It just makes you more memorable.
Definitely. Yeah. Where does that confidence come from?
Well, I think to be completely honest, especially at that time, I wasn't a very confident person. I don't think it takes a very confident person to do that. To be completely honest, I'm someone who would normally characterize himself as an introvert. So I think the main thing is to just throw yourself into it. And if people are human. If you turn up to them with a smile and you're friendly and you're happy, people tend to respond quite nicely to that. That's my method and my thing. It's just, if I turn up with a big smile, it's rare someone's going to be not smiley back.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think it's harder, like on social media, if you send a LinkedIn message, they might ignore you and you have to just go, that's okay. But actually in person, the worst that would happen is, I am so sorry, Toby, I've got somewhere else to be. I really can't chat, but thank you so much for coming over. Like that's the worst that's going to happen. Yeah. But other than that, they're not going to do anything else.
They can't ignore you. They're not going to walk away from you if you're talking to them. But I love how simple that was. It was just turn up and just be yourself and be smiley.
Yeah.
It saves the overthinking.
That's it. It immediately disarms someone if you just turn up with a big smile. Yeah. Like if you're quite like aggressive and quite like you step up to them, like you're immediately lay out what you want to say, it can be a bit confronting. They can potentially be a bit not really want to reply in kind, but you completely disarm them with a smile, ask a friendly question, especially if that you're clear that you're asking them because you want to learn from them, you want to know more about what they know. That's just like, why would you respond negatively to that?
Yeah,
if you're definitely. Like, you know, we're all human.
Exactly. Did you came to the Daniel Priestley workshop, did you?
Yeah,
that was good, wasn't it?
It was, absolutely.
For getting that one-on-one time with someone that, I don't know, you'd normally have to pay a lot of money to go to one of his in-person workshops. He was so giving with his time that day. But so why digital? Where did that come from?
This would have been back when I was 7 years old. I was taken to it would have been just for people who are about that age, like a little scratch coding to code along, just a bit of fun. And that was about a time where I was doing a lot of stuff where I was kind of trying to figure out what I did like. I remember I did trampolining for a bit, I did breakdancing for a bit, and none of it really stuck. But since the first session, I just absolutely loved it. I loved the problem solving of it. I loved it all, even at seven. And just from there, I got into tutoring. I did 5 years of tutoring. Three of them were in Scratch. And then when I was 11 and 12, I did some in HTML, CSS and JavaScript, which is website making, which was lovely. But just keeping active with it was just, I absolutely loved it throughout. I even would enter competitions. Like there's this great one called the BAFTA Young Game Designers Competition, which you can do in whatever language you want. I think it might cap at teenage to maybe like 13, 14. It might be the cap. But I entered that with a lovely little game that I had that was centered around stopping poaching of gorillas. So I had like a message to it, which was nice. I loved making that. And then went into my school career. Took my GCSEs and my A-levels with computer science and learned Python for 4 years. And just all of that sort of learning is really helpful. I'm coding in PHP currently, which is a new language and has been new for me in my new job. But because I'd done all the work in the previous coding languages, it comes much more natural and you can understand the syntax much quicker, which is really helpful.
Yeah, it's the same they say with learning a language. Like we said earlier, like if you've learned French, actually, when you then go to learn Spanish, it becomes easier. Mm-hmm. So because you've kind of got used, whereas actually English, we learn it, but you don't really overly think about it because you learn it when you're so young, don't you? Whereas when you learn as an adult or as a growing young person, you start to learn the structure of the language more so. So it's really interesting. And I was going to ask you, so you start going to these competitions and things like that. Like that, was that sort of off your own back that you were saying to your parents, I want to go and get out there and do these things? Or were they helping you find those opportunities?
So this was part of my tutoring. I was we would try and do projects. I had this thing that I called the Ace Team app, which was a website that had like little games like Noughts and Crosses, Hangman, stuff like that. And that was something I'd made in the past. And then we saw this competition came up. We put that on hold, and we basically just went, we're going to spend an hour a week. We're going to just put some time towards that. And then I had tutoring towards it, but obviously it's a competition. They couldn't do it for me. So that was an interesting sort of thing where I could ask for help, but I couldn't do much more than that. But yeah, so all it took was an hour a week for, might have been 4 months. And yeah, I built up the project and entered it in. And
amazing. And were you doing other bits to supplement it? So learning, like looking at YouTube videos or things like that? Because there's a lot you can just go and learn online now as well.
Absolutely. I think the best example of that is I was told about they'd love to have me at my job with a month's notice. So I had a month to prepare, which was lovely because before that, I knew I was going to get a job soon. I knew I had to prepare for that, but I didn't know what language it was going to be in, anything about the job. So that's quite hard because coding's massive. There's so much you can learn. So it's hard to know what to learn, which, yeah, that was much more difficult. But once I knew the language, the framework. So I asked my boss, I was like, is there anything you can recommend for me to start learning, get on this? And then for the last month I did before I started working, I completed a 30-day course on it was by Laracast, which are great for learning Laravel, which is what I work in, called 30 Days to Learn Laravel. And that was just so helpful because it gave me the opportunity to, when I start work, I immediately know the fundamentals, that I have a platform to go off of, and it doesn't really overtake your life. Like I had a great time playing golf probably once a week, maybe sometimes twice a week in the month before I started work. And it was a nice sort of mix of, you're still not, this is your last month of not working, so you don't want to absolutely floor yourself and then go straight into work. But I had a good time and I learned some important things, which are really helpful.
Love that. And so the networking piece was the bit that really stood out from Aspiration Digital. So then you went out and started networking. So tell us a bit about that experience. How does it feel turning up to an event that is mainly probably people already in their career years ahead of you? And you're rocking up as a 17-year-old at that point.
I was, yeah.
Just like, hi, I'm here. Like, how does that go?
So I always found there were two things before you even get in the room that were always difficult, I found. These were the two hardest parts of the night. I always found that you sign up maybe like a week before, you think, I'll go to this, and it actually comes around. You've just had either a day at school, day at uni, day at work, and you're thinking, I'm exhausted. I don't know if I want to do this. I could just stay at home and do nothing. But it's that thinking, no, this is going to be helpful, I should do this, and then going, that's always one of the hardest bits. But you get there. And then the second thing that is also always really hard, and I think this is funny because I feel like everyone I've spoken to has it. The second you walk into that room, everyone's already in a conversation, everyone's already speaking, and it just looks like it's the most intimidating thing ever. And you're like, oh my goodness, why am I here? Why am I doing this? But all it takes is, even if you're quite introverted, if you just go over to the drinks table they might have, go and get something like a snack, someone else will be there. And all it takes is just a little starter of just like being friendly, saying hello, and a conversation can start. And then I always found once you've had your first conversation, it all gets much easier. You get used to it. You just kind of ease into the room and you feel much more like you're supposed to be there, which is really helpful. And then from there, it can kind of flow.
Yeah. Well, sometimes that first person you speak to then goes, oh, let me introduce you, Toby, to Daisy. Yeah. Daisy would be really good. And actually, sometimes it's lucky if you find that good connecting person, but sometimes they will. Would you know who was going to be at the event to be able to do any research ahead of time? Or
often they'd announce the speakers. So you'd be able to see what the talks are going to be about, these things on how it could be helpful to you, especially for finding which conference is right for you. So the one... the first one I went to was one called dev.talk, which was really helpful in the world of back end and front end sort of developing, rather than sometimes you get them in marketing and that sort of stuff, which is not my area. So I wouldn't be able to give as much, I think, or receive as much. It was very focused on the back end and the front end and those sort of things. So that was really helpful. You could see what the titles of the talks were, so you could know what to get yourself in for. And that was really nice. And that was really helpful. And that was, and that ended up being, I spoke to one of the people who was doing a talk, which was a lovely person called George Buckingham. And he was doing a talk on why PHP is still alive, I think, in 2025. I believe that was the talk. And basically, I after his talk, I went up and I spoke to him. We chatted. I mentioned how I was looking for looking to get a job after my A-levels. We stayed in touch. And he is now my boss. So that's how that goes.
That's amazing.
How good is that? That's brilliant. You must have made a good impression. And
but all it is just, from what I remember, I went up, I was friendly, I asked a few questions, and that was it. It's not a complicated thing of you need to ask the right questions to look really smart. I just think we're all human.
Yeah, no ulterior motive. You just went to have a chat afterwards to probably say, really enjoyed your talk. I might have some questions. Yeah. And that's the thing. You never know where something's going to lead. The amount of things that have happened, and some of the guests we've had on this podcast have just been because we've crossed paths at a network event or we just won a deal at work, actually, quite a chunky deal. But actually the guy that the deal was through, I didn't even have to pitch. We went for a coffee, but I've known him for years through networking and we've just never managed to work together. And just sometime he had a project and he was like, I've got this much money, I want you guys to do it. And I was like, okay. This is different. Normally we have to go and spend hours and days and weeks pouring our hearts into a proposal that then you're like, are we or aren't we going to get it?
But
he's like, here we go. Because that's what happens when you build a network sometimes. And it doesn't happen all the time, I wish. But you just don't know what's going to come from a relationship.
Yeah. And I think, that translates quite similarly to how if you meet someone and you learn these things and you get called for an interview by someone like that, that skips all the CV stage, which I think is always interesting. I actually spoke to a careers agency to kind of help me make sure that my CV displays me in the best way is all to do with how it looks and how I am presented. And that was all really nice. And I think I got some great feedback from him saying, if you get an interview, I'm confident you'll get it just because of how I present and how that friendliness. I think that's what you want. You want someone who's going to look you in the eyes, not going to be all up in their seat sort of thing. You want to, that sort of thing. So even if you don't feel confident, just to give the body language of that can be incredibly helpful. And that was really helpful for me I didn't end up, I think I sent a CV in, but I don't think it was really important into me getting my job.
No. And I feel like you mentioned earlier when we were chatting about you did some practice interviewing with someone that could ask you the right question. Because I guess Daisy and I could come up with questions now and do a little practice interview, but we're not developers, techies. Yeah. So we wouldn't necessarily ask you the right questions to get into the, are you going to be able to do this job? So how did you go about setting that up?
So my uncle works in the development industry. He's got quite a senior role, so he's able to ask some really good questions. I think he does interviews for his work, so he definitely got experience in that front. But I think what was really helpful about that is he gave me very technical questions that were this is the stuff that you need to know and that sort of thing, and this is the stuff they'll ask you about. And it was really helpful to learn mid-interview because he was my uncle. Halfway through, I could be like, okay, I don't know what that is. Can you explain it to me?
Yeah.
And that was really helpful. It was great preparation because one of the other things is every interview is different. Because you could get interviewed by the CEO of a company who doesn't work as much on the development and he's just looking at you as a person and your qualifications. Or you could get an interview with the head of development and he's going to grill down on what you know and what you don't know to figure out that sort of thing. So there's no easy way to prep. This is what it's going to be every time. But it is really helpful to just go through these things, figure out what you do and don't know, figure out where the gaps are, and then help out. One of my biggest gaps was I didn't know much about testing at all because you don't really get taught that at GCC and A level. So, and how unit tests and feature tests and how they all sort of filter into these things and how they work together. But because I didn't know that, I was then able to prepare that and learn about it before I went to actual interviews.
Yeah. Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realize when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
How was the interview process for you? You say you submitted your CV. How was you obviously prepared a lot. that definitely helped, I'm assuming, because obviously you got the job. How did you find the interview process? Was you nervous going into it? Was you calm? Was you just hit me with the questions? I'm ready. I'm prepared.
Always very nervous. Yeah. One of my interviews was made even more stressful in the fact that I had to drive in. I just recently passed my test, and it was through town, through the centre of town, and I nearly was late because of all of the traffic. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a fun experience.
No, but I can imagine.
No, yeah, I'm always nervous before these things, and that's completely okay because mm-hmm. we're all human. If you weren't nervous, it'd be a bit surprising, to be completely honest. But what I tend to do to prepare is to learn. What's really nice is to learn about the business you're going to. It's nice to know the details of maybe what clients they work with, what language they work with, all these things to prepare, because if you show that, you immediately show the employer that you're interested in the company, that you're interested in what they do and being a part of that and contributing to that. So that was really helpful. And then the one other thing I'd say is really important is to prepare questions that you can ask them, because most interviews, if not all, will just be like, do you have any questions for us? And if you end up saying, no, not really, it doesn't come off well. It's the kind of thing of like, really? You don't have any questions out of all of this? So it's completely fine to write them down. I had a thing where in one of my interviews, I knew I had another question, but I completely forgot what it was. And I was just like, is it okay if I get my phone out and see what my question mm-hmm. was? It's completely fine, because it's like that shows them already that you've prepared, you care about this. So even it's not embarrassing to be like, oh, I've forgotten, because it shows you care about this and you've been thinking about it. So that's really helpful as well.
Definitely, just to go to that extra mile, like almost like how you do when you're just networking, you sort of know a bit of background, you've come prepared, maybe some questions. Yeah, you're just ready to do it.
I'd agree on that so much. I'm so happy you said that, because part of my judging of an interview is what questions they ask us.
Yeah.
And it's the same actually when I think of it on the flip side of as a business, when we're going for a pitch, like ahead of a pitch, you'll get a chance to ask questions. And I always think it's one of the best ways to show what kind of a business we are, by asking good questions. And then it's making sure that you've got enough prepared, because there's a really good chance that they'll answer a lot of the questions in what they tell you. So you don't want to run out. So it's like, actually, if you've got a list of 10 or 12 questions, then that's great, because you want to make sure that you still have something to ask. Did you have any moments though? Because I guess obviously you've done the prep and you were able to prep with your uncle, which is great. And I think I'd always say to people, find someone that can interview you. And even if you can't quite find someone, I mean, you got the perfect experience there. But even if you can't, you could ask ChatGPT, could you give me some good questions? And then hand that over to someone that's used to interviewing, so that they can give you feedback on how they won't be able to know whether you nailed it or not on the technical, but they'll know whether how well you came across, etc. But did you have any questions where you were like, I actually don't know how to answer this? And if so, how did you handle that?
I think in one of my interviews, a question I was asked was, where do you see yourself? Like, where is your goal in your career? And where do you see yourself towards the end? Which was quite a difficult, like, I'm only just starting. How am I supposed to know what that's going to be? But it gave me a nice insight to sort of think about, okay, what am I good at? What might that expand to? And what would I want to do? And I think I always find with people I've met who work in development, when you get really high up, you do less and less coding, which I love coding personally. So I think I wouldn't want to be someone who ends up being a CTO and is just right at the top and doesn't really do any of it. But I wouldn't mind being a project manager who makes sure that everyone's on the right line, make sure that it's all coming around nicely. And I think, especially when I'm knowledgeable on a subject, I find I'm decent at explaining things. So that'd be really helpful for a project manager, because it'd be able to transfer what I know to someone like that. So it was a question that I really didn't know how to answer at first. But you can, even at the moment, if they ask you quite a difficult question, I don't think it'd be weird to be a bit like, okay, can I think about that for a second? Just because then it shows that you're being authentic with your answers and you're really making sure that you're giving what the correct thing, rather than just spitballing randomness and seeing what comes out.
I think that's really powerful, just being like, I'm just going to take a minute, because you're not panicking. You're not visibly stressed. You're just like, I'm going to just sort of channel my thoughts and be like, okay, actually think about it. Because you're right. Yeah. If you end up saying something and just waffling, you're just like, well, you've just said it just because you're nervous and you've just rambled.
Yeah.
But you've actually taken time and been like, oh, that's a valuable answer.
Definitely. Yeah. Did you find, obviously, you said you felt nervous, which again, I completely agree, is the right way to feel. It is alien if you're not nervous at something like this. Yeah. Did that disappear as you got into the flow of the interview a bit, and did you relax down into it? Because I often find people find like the first 5 minutes or so, they're like, and then hopefully, but I guess it's partly the skill of the interviewer, because part of their job is to try and make you at ease, because you're going to give better answers if you're feeling a bit more relaxed than if you're like panicking and shaking and really nervous. But yeah, how did that come about?
Yeah, I think I do think it absolutely does get easier and easier. I think it for me personally, it never fully goes away. If I had to relate it to, for example, this right now, I came in, I was very nervous. I'm much more relaxed now, but I still have a bit in my chest that's a bit like, this is still something. I still want to make sure that I'm doing things right. And that's just, again, that shows you care. That's really healthy. It's human.
You're doing an awesome job, by the way.
Thank you very much.
So, yeah, but love that honesty as well. Because, yeah, again, it's normal to feel nervous. You're not recording podcasts every day. This is your first one, I'm guessing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Probably not your last, though, I reckon. I feel like you're for someone that says they're an introvert, you are very good at being able to share. Because some introverts would let that just mean that they don't,
it would just take over.
So you're brilliant.
Well, in fairness, what I will say is I've come out of my shell a lot in the last 2 years, I almost to the point where I don't know if now, as I am right now, I can still categorize myself as an introvert. I'm not sure it really fits that, because I'm much more comfortable going out with others. I'd rather be with other people, and I can feed energy off others and that sort of thing. So I in the past, absolutely. You'd have asked me 2 years ago, I would have been shy, looked down and told you I was an introvert. But I find it much easier now, just in the learning about the human bit, and also in a personal sense of the word. I've come a long way in my faith and my journey with Christianity and my relationship with Jesus Christ, which has massively helped me come to know who I am and be confident in that and love who I am, which has been a massive help for me, and really has helped me just, being really comfortable and knowing and being assured that this is me and I'm okay with that.
I love that, because it's so important. If you can't feel comfortable and confident in yourself, that does hold things back. So finding a way and finding a way to build that, it's incredible. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I love your confidence, because it does
it does
out.
Just radiate. You can tell. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it's really good. So you get through the interview. Were there multi-stages to your interview? Did you have to do any kind of tasks or anything? Or
so in the job that I got, I didn't. But in other interview, in another interview I did, I had a coding test, which is normal in some interviews, which is interesting because obviously there's no guarantee that they're working in the same language, stuff like that. But what's quite helpful is they often make it so that you have to do it in what they call pseudocode, or just make it really clear what you mean, which is basically the point of pseudocode. You wouldn't be able to use it, but it just explains structures and what each thing does. It can be very simple. And I find that's really helpful, because you can just say what it needs to do rather than really in depth having to make sure it works and there's no small bugs. That's not what they care about. They don't care about that something might have a tiny little syntax error, like you've missed a semicolon on the end. Yeah. That's not what they're testing for. So what was really helpful is I was set a task of make the code behind an elevator, which is quite vague. But they gave a little bit, they gave the smallest amount of guidelines to do with okay, so it needs to go up, it needs to go down, it needs to be called, and it needs to have priorities. So and then they said, 15 minutes, we'll leave the room, go nuts. And they gave me a whiteboard. So that was kind of okay, we're doing this. Yeah,
I wouldn't know where to start.
I'll walk out then.
The main thing was really to do with the structure, that you need to remember all of the things they've briefed you with, and potentially any other things. Like, for example, one of the things I thought would just be helpful to add, which is one line, is, okay, elevators normally have a weight limit. So if you could just have something that checks at the beginning to say, is the weight less than 250 kilograms? Then those sort of little details, I'd say that was one of the important things, detail in the sense of you're being thorough. And then the other thing is really structure was really helpful. So I had four separate functions that did separate things and they were called at separate times. So it was the main thing that was basically checking everything to do with the weight, which direction it was going, and these sort of things. And then I had a separate function that talks about the priority of which floor. So say it's already going down, you want to make it show that it's in order of, you're on floor 4, it's going down, you need the rest of them to be 3, 2, 1. If someone calls in, you need to make sure that the order is correct so that it will stop at the right place. And then vice versa. And then other stuff like that where it calls when to start the elevator, when the doors are shut. It's like these all sort of checks and all very structured. That's what they want. They don't mind if you've got, like, yeah, as I said, little errors, stuff like that. The main thing is that you're coding in a very structured way. It's very clear, and that, yeah, your thinking is clear, because that's what they want.
I love that.
Yeah.
I need to get you to come and fix the lifts at our office. Where it really annoys me, you hit the button and both lifts come and I'm like, they should be talking to each other. I don't need both lifts. I'm not getting in two.
That would be a check I need to put at the top. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Toby, you're going to have to come to the office and fix the lifts, because it's wasting electricity. Like, why are they both coming? They don't need to. Anyway. Okay, so that's cool. So then what happens? You get offered the job. What did they do? Did they ring you?
So I got an email when I got the offer, which was lovely to see. It was really nice. It was really nicely put out to basically be like, we've been speaking. I got it about a week afterwards, and they were like, we'd love to have you on. Here, we'll get you a letter sent soon to basically be like all the details. That was really nice.
What did you do when you read that email? You must have been like...
Well, I was in my sitting room with my parents, which was lovely, so I got to tell them straight away. They were really happy. And then what I tend to do, and this tends to be the theme, is a good advice for any email, regardless of what it is, if it's a rejection, if you reply and basically just like, great, thank you, especially if it's a rejection, and you say, keep me on your radar, I'm still really happy about this sort of thing, like, but thank you for having me, thank you for your time, just these sort of kind words that you can say just to keep the relationship there. But yeah, one of my first things I did after I received the job offer was just to reply and say thank you so much, and then immediately ask, like, is there anything I can do to prepare? What would you like me to do in an ideal world? What can I do to be the best candidate, even though I've already got this opportunity? Which I think is always helpful, especially since when I'm in my, like, junior level, at the level I'm coming in, I'm even at minimum wage, I'm not really paying my wage, because I'm going to need a lot of help. I'm going to need a lot it's an investment. It's a risk for them. So I'm like, okay, how can I make this less of a risk? How can I help you? And that's the sort of impression you want to give straight away. So that they're like, okay, we've made a good decision here. And then help you out, sort of thing.
Such a mature outlook. I love that. The job almost starts before your first day. It starts as soon as they say, right, you've got it. Because I would never have thought, oh, actually, what can I do to prepare? That wouldn't have come to mind. So when you said that, I was like, light bulb moment. Oh my God. I'm definitely going to remember that. But I'm just curious, like, how has it been, like, in the first few months of, like, full-time employment? How has that been for you? Obviously, going in as someone younger, obviously the youngest, because you're 18, just finished school. How has that been working with older?
So it's really nice. The people I'm working with are lovely. Like, it's a really nice working environment where they're all very friendly with each other, and it's not very like head down, get work done, sort of don't speak to anyone. It's a nice environment where it's important to get work done, but you're human and you're speaking to each other. So what was really nice, well, it's nice now, my first day, I was unknowingly put into what they called a test, just throw me in at the deep end and see how I fared out. Which was a lot, because, yeah, as I've mentioned, I didn't know the language that we were coding in. I didn't know all of these things. And they gave me this task that required so much knowledge that I didn't have. So that was a very stressful day, and I was very exhausted. Sure. But I ended up getting that work done in about 5.5 hours, which was quite nice for me. I think I did have help from others, which is what they want. They, especially in these, when you're a junior, they want to see if you're struggling, are you going to ask for help? Because if not, you're just going to keep struggling and not getting work done. So that, I think that was helpful that I did ask for help and got some help towards that as well, which was really nice. And I ended up, I finished the task, got it all done. And I got a lovely message on the Friday to basically say, that was a test. We wanted to see how you do. We're really happy. You've done really well. Keep working at it. And I think... The rest of that Friday, I'd finished that work to be set, And they're basically like, okay, until Monday, we're going to give you the ability to just learn more, go on the internet, use that Laracast thing I talked about before, those videos, to try and learn more, figure out where your gaps in knowledge are. And I thought to myself, that sounds really helpful, but they're quite, like, very specific on different bits. And I didn't really think that was what I needed. I think I needed a broader outlook on how all this works. So I was like, okay, that's really helpful. But instead, can I draw up a diagram so that I can very visually see how all of these things work together? Because if I can remember correctly, if you wanted to make a function that sends an email, in the Laravel system I use, you have to go from a root to a request to a controller to an action to a job to mail, model in between there, in between job as well, and then potentially other things like notifications, viewers, stuff like that. That's just the process of sending one email. So to learn that structure, I did that on the Friday, and then I came back on Monday. I was set this task that was much bigger than my one before, which was to make a support system, which was several pages. And I was much more prepared because I was like, okay, let's follow that structure. Let's see this bit, this bit, this bit, this bit. It all clicks together. That took me maybe 2 days, but I really enjoyed it because I knew what I was doing. It's much more fun and actually enjoyable to be coding when you know what you're doing, to be, because it's just, you know, you I love coding. So when you're floundering in the water, it's not as fun, but I really enjoyed those 2 days and it was much less stressful. So I think any bits you can do in between in learning that you know would be helpful to you, that's really helpful as well.
Sure, because I suppose you know how you learn and you know how you learn well.
Yeah.
So obviously you're taking aboard these new systems and how they sort of have their own operation, how they do something, but you're also tailoring it to suit you.
Yeah.
I think that's quite an important message, is to actually, you know how you work, so don't change how you work, because if not, you might not, the passion and love for it might just go. So I think that's a really important message, to tailor it to you.
Are Duolingo, Nike and McDonald's some of your favourite brands? For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
Definitely. And actually, a good reminder that just because you work for a company and they've said, oh, you can go do this, you can push back and say, oh, actually, for me, I think it'd be better I did this instead.
Yeah.
Like, and they're absolutely going to go, yeah, that sounds like a good idea then, if that's going to suit you better. Like, because actually, you know, it's on the company side, when you've got a new employee, and especially when you've got someone in a junior role, it is a lot of work, because you're constantly like, right, I've got to make sure I've got something for them to do. And the same, like, you came in for work experience. When we got people in for work experience, it's like, and actually, Amy's done an incredible job of building a program.
Yeah.
And we've got so many advocates for work experience in our team. That is less stressful than it used to be. And I think it's a reason a lot of companies don't offer work experience, because they go, well, it's going to be hard work. Not because they don't want to help, but because they're like, how do we make sure we've got interesting things for the person to keep doing? But it is hard work. So actually, if you've got someone that then is willing to kind of push back and say, this would help me more, or to help structure things, it's like, this is a dream. This is brilliant. Yeah. This is great. Because then actually you're working together rather than feeling like, oh, okay, I've got to be ready with the next spoon to feed them of what they need next. It's like, actually, so yeah, really mature outlook, really just, I mean, yeah, your new company, what they called again there?
Yam Yap.
They are onto a winner, and they probably know that already. They're like, because even though you won't be able to do everything at the moment, and as you say, you won't be fully paying your way at the moment because they can't give you tons of paying billable work, like, they're going to get something brilliant out of it eventually, because they just need to support you on that journey. And I love that they've seen that in you, because you have to give someone their first shot. Mm-hmm. Like, none of us are the finished article, like, immediately. And even if you're further in your career, you're still not the finished article. But you obviously can deliver more. In 10 years' time, when you go to a job, you'll be much more useful on day one than when you're first starting out. But
you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, and I think it's actually quite difficult with the industry currently. It's people who are senior developers are very sought after, and like, businesses think, okay, I need another developer, I'll get a senior because they're going to come in and they're going to be ready to do it all, which makes it really quite difficult for a junior to get a job in the industry, which I know a few people who are coming out of uni with uni degrees in computer science, which is obviously further than I've started from, and it's just very difficult. They end up applying to loads of places and they're like, we're looking for someone who's got experience. It's normally 2 years, but it's hard to get that 2 years of experience when you can't get the job. So, yeah. So that's the thing. And that's why it's very difficult in this industry. But I think if you go into an interview, if you go into an application, if you come into any sort of networking and you know you're going to have to convince someone to take a risk on you, and you know that, then you've got to show them how you can make it seem like less and less of a risk, in that you're going to try hard, you're going to put your everything into it, and that in 2 or 3 years' time, you're going to be a great investment.
Yeah, definitely.
I love this, honestly. And I just think that, like, from coming from a place of networking to stand out as well, because again, people that you know, and I see a lot of people that are in just these numbers of applications that are hitting, whether it's LinkedIn or a careers inbox, it's so hard to stand out. It's so hard to stand out. But actually, you can get your foot in the door by building relationships, by showing you're keen, showing, and maybe they wouldn't have considered a junior before. I don't know. I can't put words in their mouth. But just by seeing your passion and interest, suddenly they're like, oh, we could do with someone like that in the team. and you just need that sometimes.
It's really motivating as well to have like a team member like that. It just brings you up.
Yeah.
You need people that have that, the real passion for it. And we can, I mean, you can tell that. Just from like hearing you talk, yeah. It's amazing.
I love it. So you're only like 3 weeks into this new job?
Yeah, 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah.
And you're already recording your first podcast. Then what's next? Yeah. What is next? But what do you have a kind of trajectory? Obviously, not to go to your interview question of where you're going to be in 10 years, but like, what are you doing? Hands-on client work yet, or are you expecting that in the next couple of months, or what does that look like?
So yeah, I have been working on client projects, little bits where I can help here and there, which has been really nice. Also, quite a few different like styles of work that I've been doing, some in the front end, sort of making reskinning something and making it look a lot better, sometimes in the back end of making something work. These sort of I've been taken through a lot of everything, and they've gotten me in good practice early doors, like immediately writing tests after all the things I do, making sure it's completely thorough and completely works no matter how you try and break it. And there's been a few things that's been really helpful, like before, when you put up a pull request, which is basically you giving the code you've done and being like, I think this is ready to go up. Can I have any feedback? I've had some great feedback from my boss about saying like, I think this works and is good and it will not break, but I think it would be more efficient and better if we did it like this. And that's really helpful to learn. And you can take that on and then really show that, okay, you understand this, you get how this works, but we do it like this, and then that's okay. It's okay to be not perfect.
Yeah. Well, and also what you might find though is sometimes you might have done it differently, and they might go, we never thought of doing it that way, because there are different ways to do things. And one of my favorite things about having juniors in our business, and even if it's work experience or interns, is just they look at things differently, because sometimes you are stuck in your ways going, well, we always do it this way, so we got to keep doing it this way. So yeah, it might not have happened yet, but there might be something that they do that they go, Toby, like, you've just changed that. Let's all do that. Like, let's all be more Toby and do this like Toby, because this is much better. And yeah. Who knows? So you kind of keep pushing, and it's great to be able to question things sometimes and say, oh, why do we do it like that? Because there is another way.
Yeah.
Sometimes they haven't spotted that before.
And I had a similar anecdote about that, where I've been sitting in a lot of meetings and stuff like that to basically get a feel of what happens top to bottom of the business. And there was a problem they were having with one of the projects, and because it wasn't to do with, okay, what would you code this to be? It was just, how do we fix this problem in a more just the actual problem sense? I love problem solving. So I was sat quietly, in the meeting, letting them speak. And then I kind of thought, well, what if we do it like this? And I raised my hand and I was like, feel free to shoot me down. But, what about this idea? And they were like, yeah, okay, that would work. And that was quite a nice feeling of like,
brilliant.
I can contribute even little bits, even when I'm just here to sit in.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love that. And I just, having the confidence to do that and to do it in the meeting. Some people would go, oh, I'll do it afterwards. I'll go and say it to one person. Better do it in the meeting, let everyone hear. And if it wasn't the best idea, doesn't matter. Or it also sometimes can spark another good idea. Yeah, like, I always say there's never a bad idea, because the amount of times, like, we'll sometimes be having a brainstorm at work and I'll say, right, this is going to sound rubbish, but I'm going to say it because I reckon it might spark something else. Say it, and then someone goes, yeah, that wasn't great, but that has given me. And you're like, great. Yeah. Like, you just have to have that bouncing off of each other and getting things out there. Yeah. So,
and there's this great thing in that I know in the development world, people call it rubber ducking.
Yes.
Yeah, which is always really helpful and hilarious, because the expression comes from, you literally speak to a rubber duck about what your problem is. And then often when you speak it out loud, even if there's no reply, you think in your head, hang on a minute. Hang on. Yeah, I've got it now. And you work it out just by speaking it out loud. So you can do that. Obviously, you could do that with a physical, like, inanimate object, or you could do it with people, where just, like, if you're helping someone else with a problem, or if you've got a problem yourself, just speak to someone. And then you could be like, hang on a minute. Yeah, I've got it now. The best story I have about this was one that I had. I was on holiday in Cyprus, and I was doing my computer science coursework for my A-level. So my parents throughout the holiday had their ears chewed off by me being like, oh, I don't get how this works, because I was solving quite a complex problem where I basically, if you know the board game Rummy Cub.
Love that game.
It's a great game.
My
family have played it.
Oh, we need play that sometime, Toby. Oh, I'm like the queen of Rummy Cub as well. Like, I always win.
But my computer science project was to basically take the board in hand and be like, figure out what the best move you could do is, and obviously show that in the best way possible. So I was coding that, and I was basically like, okay, how do I find the best move? Because you could obviously relatively simply go, okay, this tile can go on the end of that run. Like, it can just go very simply, you do one movement. But to make it so that there's, with Rummy Cub, you can rearrange the board in such ways that you can do so much just to get one extra tile down. So I was thinking to myself, okay, how am I going to do that with code? How am I going to go through that? So what I did was I interviewed some people and basically were like, when you play the game, what does your brain do? What thought processes do you go through? And these sort of things. And that was really helpful to understand, because that gave me some strategy of like, okay, if you've got a one, that's harder to get down than a seven.
Yeah.
So you should prioritize the ones if you can get one or the other down, and that sort of thing. And then once you've got the baseline of this is what the humans do, you think, how can I solve this as a computer? And then that comes back to when I'd speak to my parents about, like, okay, can I do this? And I'd speak through this, and that eventually I did end up solving it.
Love
after
that.
A while.
Love that game as well.
And yeah, and then that, but just the speaking through it was all it needed.
Yeah. Well, we've all done that before, where you start saying to someone, oh, I need your help with this, and you start saying it, and you go, oh, don't worry, actually.
Yeah.
You just walk out. They're like, hold on, I want to know. And you're like, oh, no, I've already solved it. Don't worry. But you just needed to get it out. And I love the rubber ducking thing from the development world. Like, we need that everywhere.
I hadn't heard of that before, but I absolutely love it. I'm going to start doing it just in my uni room, I think.
Yeah.
You know, just standing there and talking to, like, I don't know, like a bear.
Yeah.
Like a stuffed animal or something.
Love it. Yeah. Actually, we've got loads of ducks around the office. They're not really rubber. They're more like little redden ducks. It's another story, but I might get one of those and start talking to it.
I've got a bunch of tiny ducks around my house, which is a lovely story, because my brother did it for, it might have been my mum's birthday or something along those lines, but he was just about to go to uni. So he basically left 100 like or so tiny ducks around the house. And basically it just meant that whenever my mum would find the new one, and she still finds new ones, she'd think, oh, Samson left that, and he's not here.
So love it.
And that was really, like, that's always great. And they just live around our house now. You'd see them on the top of doors and stuff like that.
You know, so we've got tons all around our office that Lulu, our office manager, hides for people to find, and like, and then you can either keep it or you can go and rehide it again. But it's just like a fun thing. Oh, so love that. This has been such a fun conversation. Like, we've gone everywhere, from inspired by networking to Rummy Cub and rubber ducks at the end there. Like, it's literally been everywhere. But honestly, I just feel like there's been so many little nuggets in there to help people. I think, especially hearing it from someone at Utopi that's literally just gone through this, because sometimes actually we're asking people to dive back 10, 15 years to remember, and you can't really remember exactly what it was like trying to get your first job, etc. So I think the freshness of this conversation, and just, I just love the way you were inspired and then just went and did something about it, found events, got out there, and now you've got a fantastic new job. And I'm so excited to watch where it goes. And as I hinted to you earlier, there's a small chance we might be bringing Aspiration Digital to Bournemouth. So we will absolutely get you on stage for that. But if not, you are welcome at any of our future events. And also maybe we'll get you back on the podcast in a year or two's time to hear what's happened since.
That'll be so interesting to see. Yeah, where you've gone.
I just love it. Like you've been here before. There's a lot of wisdom up there you're 18 now, are you? For an 18-year-old, there is a lot of wisdom there. So just thank you so much for sharing so openly and for coming on and sharing your story. And Daisy, you've been a wonderful co-host as always.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me interview you.
No worries.
Definitely. I hope we're going to have you back again soon.
Of course, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you on another episode of Behind the Future. That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.